right up, stay on schedule. And I'm going to note, we have a long day here. If you need to duck out to a restroom or refreshments, whatever, please take the opportunity as you need it. I want to especially, as we call the meeting to order, thank those who were able to attend the inauguration of President Tumines yesterday at Utah Valley University. It was really a fabulous event, and we're really pleased with what's happening there and her strong start. And so thanks to those of you who were able to join us yesterday. We're going to start I'm going to turn the time over to Commissioner Buehler to give us a little overview of the process we're going to be going through the next couple of days, and then after that we'll turn the time over to Associate Commissioner Kimberly Henry to give us a little presentation to start us off. So
thank you, Mr. Chair, and let me just first of all introduce to you Representative Mike McKell. He's hiding in back there. Representative McKell is the new House Chair of the Higher Ed Appropriations Subcommittee, and we're pleased to have him join us for a little bit this morning, or for as long as he wants to stay throughout the day. And then, anyway, with that, let me just kind of, as Chair Simmons said, I just want to give you a little overview of our process over the next couple of days. Of course, one of the key responsibilities of the Board of Regents is setting tuition, and you'll recall that you revised our tuition policy last November, and the procedures for setting tuition. Some of the elements are consistent with previous years, however, some are new. There will now be a single proposed rate for each institution rather than the old first tier, second tier that we did for a number of years. As in previous years, before tuition is acted on by the Board of Regents, tuition needs are considered at the institutional level, including boards of trustees. Also, truth in tuition hearings were held as required by law. Now, this year, I want to thank many regents attended one or more of these events. Also, Commissioner Staff, Kimberly Henry, or there was good student participation this year at the Truth in Tuition hearings. So today, let me just mention the details on tuition are provided in your board book under tab U. And Dr. Henry, as Chair Simmons said, will provide an overview of tuition issues, including background information, relevant data, and possible scenarios. And then each president will present their proposal. You have in your folders a schedule for today, looks like that. And so you'll see we'll start with the community colleges, have a short lunch break, and then we'll continue with the regional universities and conclude with the research universities. We've allowed 30 minutes for each presentation, so with the idea of maybe 10 or 15 minutes for the president, and then 15 or 20 minutes for regent questions and answers, back and forth discussion. You also have in your folder, as a starting point, suggested questions and things that you may want to ask. Encourage you to really, as board members, to really engage in this process today. We do have scheduled at 4:30 student leaders to come in and give us their input, and also a public hearing, which you're required to hold by, you're required by law to hold. And so there's nothing to be gained by hurrying through things, because we will be here at 4:30. Did you have a question? Oh, okay. As you consider the president's proposals, you, of course, will want to keep in mind the importance of meeting the institutional needs to provide, and also in keeping with your goals of keeping an affordable higher education that is also high quality. And the affordability metrics which you have that you have adopted. So With that, are there any questions on the, oh, let me just mention tomorrow, so that's today. Tomorrow, right after the breakfast with trustees, Chair and Vice Chair have set aside a half an hour for just open discussion among the board on the topic of tuition, and then we'll go into our committee meetings and so forth. And then in the afternoon during Committee of the Whole, you'll be taking action on setting these tuition rates. And so with that, are there any questions about our procedure? Yes, Regent Tyer?
I'm sorry if...
No, that's...
So is our, like, will we vote on each institution by itself? And is the only motion we have is whether we accept it or not? Or it, can we... Do you understand my question?
Yes, I sure do. I think we need to... Let's see.
I don't know how this...
Can you turn off and I'll turn on? Maybe.
Do they need to push the button?
There we go. Now I'm back. Yes, so we'll, after we get a sense from you, after we've heard everybody today and some discussion tomorrow, we can prepare a motion sheet, but your option is not only yes or no, but you will need to, in the motion, set a rate for each institution. So there'd be 8 different rates. And it could be either what the president's proposing or something different.
So it's one motion for the whole thing or a motion for each institution?
The motion could include each rate, but each rate will be...
Or
you could choose to split the motion.
We can.
That's
we can
right.
choose to split.
That's right.
We can choose to make a motion for each one if we choose to.
Yeah, we can do right. them individually.
And presumably, whether it's in one motion or 8, the rates would be could be different for each institution. So it would not be a single rate for all institutions. Does that help?
I understand that.
Okay.
My question is, do we accept?
Let me turn.
Good. Yeah. My question is okay. Now I know each institution has their own what they would like. I understand that. Is it possible for us to make a recommendation for a different amount than what they suggested?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Regent Wright?
Is there anything that requires us to tackle tuition in this meeting at this time? Or are we as regents, the way I understand it, I just want to confirm, we can tackle the tuition issue at any time during the year. Is that correct?
Yes, you could. The reason we do it in this meeting, in the March meeting, you know, for tomorrow, is because it fits in with the timetable. Well, there are two reasons. One, to know where we stood with the legislative session. There's a reason we don't do it earlier. And second, if we go any later, it makes it very difficult for the institutions to implement whatever the rate is as they go forward for the next academic year. And so if you were to delay it into like July or something, then they'd have to delay the implementation. That makes sense. All right, then let me have Dr. Henry. And oh, her materials are also under tab U, her PowerPoint. And so you've I'm sure have had an opportunity to review everything. Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. So in addition to being in tab U, it's also on Diligent, as well as each of the presentations that we've received so far from the institutions. Some of the slides you will see have some small numbers, so if you do want to see the actual numbers in the slides, you may want to refer or follow along in Diligent or on the handout. Absolutely. So what you'll want to do is you'll want to go to @SLCC. It's the open one. The @SLCC won't.
Network
while you're getting connected, I'll just also mention, of course, this whole meeting is a public meeting, as all of your meetings are, and also being live streamed. So just to be aware of that.
So as you're all getting logged in, as Dave mentioned, each of the institutions will be given about 30 minutes for their presentation. The presentation that I have for you may be 30 minutes, it may be closer to 45 as we had planned, depending on what questions you might have about the data as it's presented and other items. I also want, as I get started, I want to make sure that I express my appreciation to everyone in this room for taking the time to talk about tuition. The institution, trustees, the presidents, and students have put a lot of effort into this, as well as members of my staff, Brian Sheppy and Melissa Jones. We've done a lot of work in a short amount of time. The legislative session ended a couple of weeks ago, and in between that time, we've traveled from the top of the state to the bottom of the state, visiting each of the institutions, understanding the tuition proposals, and visiting with the trustees. So I just want to again say thank you. This is a lot to cram into a two-week period as we get ready to go forward. Dave mentioned today's schedule. This is just a quick reminder for you. We'll start with the Commissioner's Office presentation, which once I'm done, then we'll turn the time over to President Heftalen, and she'll go into Salt Lake Community College and Snow College. We've tried to group the institutions together by mission type to allow for some consistency and comparability in the information that you receive. We'll break for lunch at 12:45, and we'll reconvene at 1:30, starting with President Williams. And then we'll conclude at 4, we'll have student leaders and public comment at 4:30 this afternoon. So we want to make sure that we take the time. We will need to be here at that point in time because that is what is posted on our agenda. And that's when the students are actually planning to be here to provide comment as well. And then there'll be room for board discussion at 5 o'clock, or we can reconvene tomorrow morning, and during the discussion time we'll revisit the tuition topic. So as we begin this presentation, I think the biggest thing that underlines it from my vantage point is that the Regents' commitment to affordable college. Regents have taken active measures to ensure that Utahns can affordably access quality post-secondary information or education. This statement is taken directly from the strategic plans. It is a commitment. We're committed to making sure that students can access, whether it's at Salt Lake Community College or the University of Utah and everything in between. As Dave mentioned, there were some significant revisions to the policy regarding setting tuition. The majority of this was started well in advance of the legislative audit, which came out in October. So I want to commend the board for thinking and having some foresight into having some of these conversations about tuition before the audit came out. The audit just helped expedite some of these changes, which we adopted in November. We discontinued the uniform first-tier and second-tier tuition approach and moved to a more specific tuition for each institution. In addition, we have now added the two-day session in March, where each of the institutions are asked to actually give a presentation to you so you can understand what was presented to their students, what was presented to their trustees, and provide more detail than what we've had in the past regarding uses of these funds. We've asked that they have demonstrated support from their trustees, as well as documentation showing that their students have been involved in the process. We've asked that they give us the anticipated impact for student access, retention, and completion rates, and the dollar and percentage adjustments being proposed. In addition, a new activity that we've engaged in is doing spot checks, spot audits, if you will, on the use of tuition dollars at our institutions. And this year we've done two, and I'll talk to you about those in just a moment. As we've shared, and this was something we shared with the legislature, truth and tuition hearings are statutorily required. Each institution held these truth and tuition hearings as they were required to. The amount of students that attended this year at each institution was actually a record for most of them. We had as many as over 100 students participating down at Dixie. And we had anywhere from 30 to 40 students at Salt Lake, or not Salt Lake Community College, excuse me, Snow College, which was phenomenal for them. They're usually seeing one or two. So students were active in this process. They engaged. They participated in the conversation. Student leadership, student fee advisory boards, those groups were all involved. In addition, the Board of Trustees have all had the opportunity to review the proposals that you're seeing from the institutions. The alternative scenarios that we'll present to you give you context about what we're talking about, but the institutions have shared and their trustees are very supportive of the proposals that you'll see this afternoon. And then today is about the tuition presentations. We want to make sure that you hear from the institutions directly so they can tell you why they need the tuition increase in addition to the funds that they receive by the legislature. And then the final tuition decision will be tomorrow afternoon during the Committee of the Whole meeting. So as we start this presentation, there are several things that I'll be going over with you in terms of affordability considerations. Like I had mentioned, the annual use of tuition revenues. This is something new. We'll do more and more of these as we move forward, but we have two. So this is our spot check audits. How the proposed tuition rate compares to the state's median income statistic. This is the metric of affordability that you adopted in January, and I want to show you where the current rate is compared to the current state's median income. The state funding received by the legislature, national and regional statistics and comparisons for each institution, the cost data, what does it cost an institution for an award, as well as serving an FTE on an annual basis, the average student debt load in Utah, that's the other piece. In any conversation around tuition, you should take into consideration the financial aid element as we're talking about it. And then the combined impact of the tuition and fee rate adjustments, as well as we'll take into account student and public comment at the end of the day. So as mentioned, we did two spot check reviews thanks to Dave Pulsifer. He was able to get to Weber and Salt Lake Community College. In our review, we found that there was no concerns about the way that they utilized the dollars that were approved. They followed the uses that they outlined to the board in 2018 with respect to how those dollars were used. However, there's a little caveat with that. Prior to this cycle, the categories are very, very broad. And so anything that would directly impact student success, they could use the dollars for it. So it wasn't like they were this particular project or this specific expense. It was more of a broad sense. And so as you're looking at today's presentations, the institutions have done a great job in terms of identifying a little bit more detail with respect to how those dollars would be used, which would give us an opportunity to go back and audit against those proposed uses. Any questions on those two spot checks? All right, so now I'm going to jump into the numbers. There's a lot of information here. If I talk too quickly, please let me know. If you have questions, stop me at any point in time. So this is we'll start with the Regent metric of affordability. So this is basically the metric you adopted in January, establishing the threshold of what you would like to see as it relates to affordability with respect to the published tuition and fee rates. Yes. Oh, she needs tech. I'm like, Nina. So when we looked at this information, we adopted a threshold for the research institutions at 15% of a median household income. So that published tuition and fee rate, I want to make it clear that not all students pay the published tuition and fee rate. This is the sticker price. Any student financial aid that they receive brings that sticker price down. But for the sticker price, you can see that University of Utah is at 14.8, Utah State was at 11.9. Our regional comprehensive institutions, you set the threshold at 10%. And you can see where each of the four of those institutions fall out with respect to where their current tuition and fee rates are. We have three out of the four that are actually below the 10%, and we have SUU who's just slightly above. And then with respect to our community colleges, we said that as long as their tuition is 7% or less of the median household income, that would reflect affordability. And you can see that all three, including USU Eastern, meet that benchmark at this point in time before making any changes. With respect to the legislative funding, the board should be considering the amount of new ongoing funding received by the system for the upcoming year. This was an amazing funding year for higher education, and again, we want to say thank you to the legislature for the resources that they've provided to us. One of the things that I want to footnote, though, is that the legislative appropriations for this exercise have been aligned to the board's broad budget categories, but they may not actually fund the projects that were requested by the board or the institutions. This allocation includes items like the engineering initiative and some of those other projects that came forward, which we're grateful for the dollars for, but it did not necessarily address what the institutions were specifically asking for. The positive thing is the performance-based funding that comes to the institutions. This is where we will be able to use a lot of those resources to fund the access efforts of the institution, the timely completion efforts of the institution, and workforce as far as the dollars will stretch. So again, the board's request was for about $84 million. Now, the reason why that is 84 and that compensation number, the compensation number was a plug figure. We didn't know what the state would approve. We guessed at 2%. They came in at 2.5%, so we're very grateful for that. But if we had aligned it, you would see that we're about dollar for dollar with respect to what they provided to us. The next three slides are taken from an NSHEMS presentation to the Higher Ed Commission and look at how Utah fares in three primary metrics. Now, these ones have small numbers on them, so I would encourage you to look at the hard copy in your agenda or on Diligent if you want to see what the numbers actually are. But this first slide is the relationship between tax funds and tuition per FTE in Utah and the influence of enrollment growth levels. So you can see the green bar on top. If you're colorblind, you probably can't see, but the darker shade on top represents the tuition. And you can see since 1992, so this is 25 years of data, since 1992 that green share has grown quite a bit with respect to the funding per FTE. Part of that has been influenced by the dramatic enrollment growth that has happened over time. We're taking on more additional students. We didn't necessarily receive funding from the legislature for those students, so we took them on tuition. In addition, you can see the years of the budget reduction. That's where you will also start to see that green bar start to grow. So this is just kind of showing you where Utah is at with respect over the last 25 years of that tax funds to tuition relationship in a dollar amount for each FTE. The second one is how Utah compares overall to the tax funded tuition relationship in the higher education budget for FY16. You can see Utah is the blue line. The national average is the red line in the middle. Utah was at 46.5% funded by tuition versus the national average of 47.3%. There are 17 states below Utah with a greater funding coming from tax dollars. The rest of the states on the other side are receiving a smaller portion of their budget with respect to tax dollars. But in terms of the national average, Utah is kind of right there in the middle. Finally, this slide shows the percent of tuition that a higher education revenues are paid for by family versus the state. And again, we're looking at from 1990 to 2016. You can see historically we've always talked about this 75-25 relationship with funding. In 1990, 75% of our funds actually came from the legislature, from tax funds, while 25% came from our family incomes and through tuition contributions. Over time, that gap has narrowed dramatically to a point where we were about 50-50, which is kind of where we're hovering right now. It depends on the institution. Some are worse, some are better. But you can start to see there is a little deviance. And the shift or the slopes of those lines are going more in the right direction, and we're hoping to see that continue as we move forward. This slide is not in the hard copy, but it is now posted on your Diligent site. But this is the tax fund to tuition mix ratio for FY18. You can see that overall the system is about 51% tax funds, 49% tuition. And you can see the balance between the institutions. Our community colleges tend to be funded a little bit better. We would expect that. We would actually hope to see that number even higher in terms of legislative tax funds. So with Snow College at 67 tax funds, 33 tuition, and Salt Lake Community College is 62 tax funds, 38 tuition. It's not great, but it's better than what it could be. You can see our regional institutions are all over the place. We've got some that have swapped the relationship. UVU and SUU, you're upside down a little bit with more money coming from tuition. Part of that is driven by growth issues. If you're growing fast, you're bringing in more tuition revenue. You may not be getting the same offset with tax fund dollars to support that growth, so you can start to see that shift. Part of it is tuition increases over time, and part of it is due to the fact that there was significant budget reductions. During 2007, 2008, 2009, where that shifted those balances quite dramatically. So this is something you want to keep in mind as you start to hear the institutions talk about why they do still need tuition dollars even after they receive tax funds. Because the tax funds are extremely helpful, but there are still a lot of costs associated with these institutions that weren't addressed with new legislative tax funds. One of the criticisms, one of the pieces of data that we need to make sure that you are also aware of, is the indices of price changes when looking at your tuition increases. So this slide shows the CPI, the HEPI, the WICHE four-year and two-year increases for the last 6 years as compared to the institutional increases for that same period of time. HEPI is the Higher Education Price Index. So there's the Consumer Price Index, which takes into account all of the manufacturing and every kind of other organization. The higher education one basically takes just your higher education institutions, looks at the costs, and says this is the more comparable piece. We include both because this is where people like to kind of focus. And if you look at our institutions, in most cases, they're exceeding those particular ratios. The one thing to keep in mind, though, is this is only half the picture. This is the part that drives me absolutely crazy. The cost of higher education is 50% tax funds, 50% tuition. So even though this is a price index, it's only representing half of the equation. When you throw in the tax funds piece, that gets closer to the CPI and HEPI index because of the cost of goods associated with that. But this is the target. This is what the press picks up on. This is the piece where the legislature says, why are you increasing more than CPI or HEPI? And this is where we have some challenges. And so, again, all of this information is there. And you can see last year's tuition increases, for the most part, were below the previous year's CPI or HEPI. We did a great job in holding those lower. Any questions on this particular slide? So as we look at the next several slides, these demonstrate where the Utah institutions rank against national, regional, and region-approved peers with respect to tuition and student fees. We've been very proud as a state to talk about how our four-year institutions rank. Our two-year institutions were kind of middle of the pack, but the four-year institutions were third in the nation when it comes to the affordability of our tuition, with Wyoming and Florida being the two states below us. When we start to break this out and we look at it from an institution-by-institution perspective, I want you to be very cognizant and notice where your institutions sit. University of Utah sits at the lowest tuition rate with respect to their Rocky Mountain, Carnegie, WICHE, and the region-assigned peer group. Utah State is the lowest with respect to those particular groups. Weber is the lowest with respect to their particular groups. SUU, your Rocky Mountain peers, you're a little bit higher than that, but you're still fairly low compared to the other organizations that are similar to you. Dixie State is low compared to their peers. Utah Valley is low compared to their peers. So this helps demonstrate and drive that point home that the four-year schools, they're doing a good job. They're being affordable. They're staying competitive. They're looking at all of the metrics around it. Then we go to our two-year schools. If you'll notice, Snow College is towards the bottom of this list. They tend to be a little bit more expensive than their Rocky Mountain, WICHE, and Carnegie peers. And their peer group that's assigned by the regents, they're kind of tracking right there. And unfortunately, when we pull up Salt Lake Community College, they're a little overpriced as compared to their peers. And so these are things that students are starting to be aware of and cognizant of well. And so if they go to a community college in another state, now we always talk about the imbalance of saying, well, a Utah student isn't necessarily going to go to Colorado or isn't necessarily going to go to another state. But the Utah student is paying more in their home state than a Colorado or a California resident may be paying in their state? And is that a fair place for our institutions to be? As we talk about the cost data, so this is something that we've been tracking fairly recently with respect to the total cost per award. This doesn't break it out by award type, so this is certificates all the way up to doctoral degrees for our research schools. I'm in associate degrees and lower for our institutions. I've included, again, the percent of these costs that are funded by tuition, just to give you kind of a reference point. The total cost represents both tax funds and tuition. So in the case of the University of Utah, an average cost per award granted is about $62,000. 50% of that $62,000 comes through the tuition that's paid over that period of time. With respect to the annual cost per FTE, so this is just operating costs year over year, it costs the University of Utah about $17,800 per FTE on an annual basis. And again, 50% of that is coming from tuition.
Can you just speak to the methodology for a minute? As you take the University of Utah as an example, the $61,982, that's the cost per award. But I presume that you're taking sort of total cost in fiscal year 18 and dividing it by the number of awards, as
correct,
opposed to going back and trying to,
yes,
take an average over the 4 years it would have taken to get the award. Is that,
yes,
is that a fair?
That is fair. It is a very simplistic way of getting to this particular value.
Yeah.
This ends up making it be potentially a little more because of the recent year versus some of the previous year.
Yeah, because if you've had growth, it assumes kind of a static state in terms,
correct,
of enrollment. Yeah.
Yeah. So, other questions? All right.
How when we compare ourselves to other states, do we know how much tax revenue is coming in on those other states, or are we just comparing the totals?
So these comparisons are the sticker price comparisons, but we do know how much in terms of tax funds and the tuition comparisons that they have as well. So that's part of that original piece of information that the NCHEMS that showed kind of the how much is coming from which. But again, it's going to vary by institution. Some of the conversations around community colleges talk about the ability to have multiple tax fund sources. So even though we don't have a property tax, all of our community college dollars come from tax funds or tuition. Other states, they have a property tax source. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're getting a bigger share of their budget because they have a property tax source. Sometimes what they do is they say, well, we want 70% coming from tax funds, 35% can come from property tax, 35% can come from tax funds, but 30% will come from tuition. It just makes it an easier shift of the burden, if you will, so the legislative dollars can go farther. So
I guess my concern is we could look low compared to other states if you aren't looking at the difference between controlling costs as versus how much money is being contributed by the state.
Yeah, so with respect to our institutions, the institutions always are at the bottom end of those cost calculations. They're at the bottom end of the tax fund versus kind of tuition, or just in the middle in terms of that. So the western side of the U.S. tends to be funded similarly to what we look like, and so that's where most of those comparisons actually lie. Rocky Mountain, Western Inter, the Wichee Group, and then the Carnegie Peers looks at it more from a national perspective, and then the Regent Peer Group is specifically targeted institutions that look similar with tax funds, tuition, student enrollments, and those types.
And doesn't
of things.
Doesn't that get back to what we were seeing earlier in terms of where we are, kind of ranked nationally, mm-hmm, in terms of total legislative or state support as a percentage of total? If you go back a few slides.
Yeah, so
yeah,
this,
right there. Yeah.
This one, if you'll look,
oops,
there's a harder. You've got like Wyoming, California, Alaska, New Mexico, Hawaii, Idaho, Nevada, Texas, and Utah. So the majority, more than half of those states at that lower end are in the western side of the U.S., where there tends to be more still tax funds flowing in from legislature or local tax, property tax, into the higher education institutions. And Utah, we're kind of slipping, and we're starting to look a little bit more like everybody else versus those that are even around us. So
when it comes to contributions from taxpayer dollars.
Correct.
I guess my concern is, and just, I would love your opinion on this, if that's okay, Chairman. How dangerous is it for us to compare ourselves to other states when making this kind of a decision on tuition? In other words, I mean, I tell my kids, don't do what everybody else is doing. I tell them that all the time. And I know in my business, I try not to do that. We try to be more competitive. How dangerous of a practice is it to make decisions based on national averages and regional averages?
So this is one piece of, like, 50 pieces of information that you should evaluate and weigh. Regarding the ability for institutions to compete with their peers, to have the same available resources, I know if President Watkins were here, she would say she's kind of at a disadvantage with respect to the Pac-12, because even though she's cheap, she's fighting the concept of what's the value proposition. The Pac-12 schools, they're more expensive, so what's wrong with the University of Utah if they're so cheap? However, with that said, there is also the challenges when you look at community colleges. If our community college has the rate of a four-year institution and a student can't get the services that they want or that they need or that they would expect, that creates some challenges for the community college with respect to enrollment, because why stop there? Why just not go to the four-year institution that's kind of right there as well? So it is kind of a slippery slope, but it also has to be weighed case by case to see where institutions lie. It's also a comparison that when the press start doing allocations about how Utah compares, that's one of the first things that they go to. They go to a national comparison. Where is Utah as compared to those? So yes, we are great. We're low compared to that, and that's a great starting point, but that doesn't mean that's the ending point in the conversation.
I guess just my final point to that, and I'd love any comments you have on it, is we've seen this rapid rise in tuition across the country, faster than the rate of inflation by many, many times over. And if that's the case, and students really are suffering under crushing student debt, and that's become a bigger debt than credit cards and car loans and everything else, and that students are really struggling, to compare ourselves to a national average in a trend that isn't all that positive seems like a dangerous practice to me.
So there's a couple of things. We'll talk about the student loan debt, because that's really important for... Sorry, I get stuck behind a podium. We'll talk a little bit about what Utah's debt loads look like and kind of the conservative practice of Utah in general. But this is something that I kind of want you to pay attention to a little bit too in terms of the per FTE. Utah's in a very unique position in the fact that we continue to grow. We have a replenishing student population that's kind of coming through the pipeline. And as a result, the dollar amount per FTE that the institutions are receiving, even with tuition increases, is remaining fairly flat when you combine the two. You don't see a lot of difference or change between what we were receiving in 1992 per FTE versus what we're receiving in 2017 per FTE. Yet we have a significant number of additional students on our campuses. And so the institutions are doing more, serving more students with technically less dollars per student, or about the same equivalent dollars per student at that point in time. The comparison at the national level and looking at the debt pieces, I want to kind of get to that. So were there any other questions before we jump to that?
Mr. Chair. When I was taking statistics, we were required to read a book called Lies, Damn Lies, and Statistics.
Yep.
And I'll never forget it, but you know, I always think of that. And I would love to hear, as we hear these presidents, you know, proceed today, the nuances that they are facing. For instance, this new performance-based funding and what that will do for open enrollment institutions.
Right.
This whole idea of usable space. Some spaces are more equipped for academics, and some they've had to kind of remediate. There's just so many nuances with this. I'm hoping that we'll get that qualitative feedback from our institutions as to why and how, and just so that we understand the context in which some of these, you know, tuition comparisons
decisions
are made.
Yeah, so with respect to that, I'll defer to all of the presidents, and as you hear their presentations, if you have specific questions, that would be the most opportune time.
Here.
I'd just like to follow up a little bit what Thomas said, that, I mean, to see that graph, to see that thing that you put up about Salt Lake Community College, I just really struggle with even seeing that, because we don't, I mean, without knowing what percentage the state is putting into that, I think that's just real deceptive. And I think it's really important that we understand, you know, what students are paying and what states are paying to make any kind of comparison.
Right, which is why we do include kind of that.
Well, we don't do it from the peers. So we know for ourselves, but we don't know for what we're comparing. I mean, this slide is totally comparing it to other places. It's not comparing it to Utah.
What this is actually comparing it to is the same published tuition and fee.
Oh, I understand that. I understand that. But to me, that's a meaningless number unless I know more information. It just, that's meaningless to me, because I think it's anyway.
So what I can suggest as part of this as well, and we can incorporate this as we move forward, is inside of the data book in tab M of the data book, you can access it online. Those are comparisons with respect to the institutions and their regent approved peer list of 10. In that, you will see kind of the tax funds versus tuition. You should see some financial revenue pieces to help give you a perspective. That should start down that path of answering that question, but with respect to where the Wichita and the Rocky Mountain and the Carnegie, that's a little bit tougher to get to, but we'll see what we can do moving forward with that.
Yeah, I just bet that I bet it would be very telling to have that information on some of these graphs. I think that would be very telling for us.
So the one thing,
as we proceed.
Yeah, and the one thing that I just again want to emphasize is this piece of data right here. Wyoming's tuition as a percent of public education is 13%. The rest of that is coming from tax funds. Wyoming is one of those schools in the Rocky Mountain and in the Wichita kind of region. So the majority of the schools are receiving more tax funds. Now, whether it's tuition, or not tuition, whether it's property tax or state tax, I don't have that.
Right, right.
But the tuition rates, so even though they're getting more from the tax dollars, their tuition rates are similar to what Salt Lake Community College, or less than what Salt Lake Community College is able to charge, because of that
right.
Tax fund piece.
I find slide 12 to be, well, let's see. I think it's slide 12. It's the by the numbers slide, the institutional costs. I keep going back to, I think we need to always stay focused on what the cost per award looks like.
Mm-hmm.
It's only one measure, but I think it's a really important one, because, and you have to know that in the context of what peers in the same kind of, in the Carnegie peer group or whatever is the appropriate peer group looks like, to understand whether, you know, if we're operating really efficiently and we're looking for tuition increases that may look a little higher than average, I feel better about that than if we're operating inefficiently and asking for it. So that's one of the places I'd come from in all of this.
Yeah. But still, even in our state, with our different kinds of institutions, with our research institutions, our community college, we're really comparing apples to oranges there too. You know what I'm saying? Like, because they're all different in what they do too. So we're not only different in our own state, but we're different in our peers.
Yeah, this is the challenge of having this is why we bring multiple data points to begin with too, because that national comparison, it may mean nothing. It may mean something depending on which metric and what lens or what glasses you have put on today. With respect to the cost per award, this is something that we can look into. It's not something that's published out there with respect to by institution type, but we can definitely look in and see what we can pull out of IPEDS for that as we move forward. Other questions? So as with any tuition conversation, you should always take into consideration the impact of student financial aid availability and the student debt loads of Utah students. This particular chart looks at students for 14-15 and the types of student aid that they may have received. You can see that 36% of our students received no loans or no grant aid, and that's how they chose to go through college. Now, that doesn't mean that their parents didn't help them. That doesn't mean that grandma and grandpa might have given them some resources. It just means that they didn't get anything from the institution or from the federal government. 30% of our students receive just some sort of grant aid, so a scholarship, a tuition waiver, and they don't take any loans to help pay for college. 9.8% take just loans, and they don't take out any grant aid, or they don't receive any grant aid to help them. And then the 23.2% is both a combination of grant aid and loans. So what you can see is there is about 65% of Utah students that receive some sort of financial assistance to help pay outside of, with respect to loans or grant aid. When looking at the types of student financial aid that look like, you can see the biggest chunk, and again, the numbers are small, but the biggest blue chunk on that screen, that's your federal financial aid. That's the Pell Grant. We've got a significant number of our students that actually do receive the Pell Grant. Now, we may be leaving $40 million on the table, but we're getting $230 million put into the state to help with tuition costs. So students aren't necessarily paying the full freight or the sticker price. The small little red slice, that's state aid. That's 2.6% of the aid that comes. So that is designated as state specific. It could be like our New Century Scholarship, our Regent Scholarship, which are great resources and tools to the students that receive it. But in terms of the bigger picture of how aid is distributed or provided, the state has a much smaller role in this equation. 26.2% represents what the institutions are doing with respect to aid for students. This is tuition waivers. This is scholarships that they may be offering. Institutions are very committed to finding ways to make sure that students can access their institutions and provide aid in doing so. They partner it up with the federal financial aid. They partner it up with whatever state aid that they get, but they are a significant player in this conversation. And then the other aid, the 4.9%, these would be like your private scholarships that come in from business and industry that a student might bring with them that doesn't go through the institution. So there's a lot of help out there, but it is kind of interesting to see where the help is actually coming from. So one of the things that I wanted to highlight is for FY 2020, something to keep in mind, the Pell Grant will increase $100 per year. Up to $61.95. That's a 1.64% in the Pell Grant availability for students. With respect to federal financial aid, again, just some of the numbers to give you context. 57,000 students, almost 57,600 students received Pell Grants for $223 million. We have about 180,000 students in our system, and almost half of them, well, almost 40% received some sort of federal financial aid. 10,000, almost 11,000 students participated in the Perkins Loans, the Federal Work Study, and the FSEOG and LEAP programs for about $13.3 million. The institution aid, this is kind of just a snapshot of what's out there, but resident tuition waivers, there were $51 million awarded to resident students to help offset the cost. The non-resident tuition waivers, I know we've had tremendous amounts of conversation on this particular subject, but $87 million was awarded to bring in students from out of state to help augment the educational experience here in the state of Utah. And then need-based tuition scholarships, this is not everything. This just represents what the board did in 2003-2004. They approved a tuition increase, but also added a 0.5% of tuition that the institutions were to use in perpetuity for supporting need-based aid on their campus. It also takes into account the educationally disadvantaged dollars, scholarships that come to the institutions that they can use as well. So the Ed Disadvantage Program is in the state aid. TH Bell Teacher Loans, Engineering and Scholarships, the VET Gap, you can see that dollar amount starts to dwindle. I did not include Regent Scholarship and New Century, which is about $15 million on a yearly basis. And then obviously private scholarships. We don't track private scholarship information in our office. It's not something that we can access, but it is a resource.
And I believe the T.H. Bell teacher loans are now grants for recent legislation, right?
Yes, yeah. And so we'll, as we move forward, that will be the case. When we talk about student debt load, Utah is a far blue bar. After the 4 years of graduating, the average amount is $18,000. Now, that's nothing to sniff at. That is still $18,000, but that's less than $4,000 a year, or about $4,000 a year, give or take, that students may be borrowing. And it's not just to pay for tuition and fees. I think we need to clarify and make sure that everybody understands it's paying for life expenses, it's paying for housing, it's paying for transportation, it's paying for childcare, it's paying for food. Tuition and fees are a piece of this, but not the entirety. And so as students who want to attend school full-time and not work, they are borrowing to help accommodate that. If they're not living at home, you can start to see that. But this dollar amount is less than any other state in the country. And then also in terms of the percentage of our graduates that graduate with debt, Utah is still dramatically less than the rest of the nation. 38% of our graduates graduate with debt. When you start to look at our closest, it looks like it's closer to 45% starting in Alaska. And you can kind of see across the board. So Utah is very conservative. Now, again, we don't like to borrow. Students try not to borrow. They don't want to go into debt. But those that do, they're being conservative about it. And the tuition and fee rates are allowing it to stay low. But they're not just borrowing for tuition and fees. Okay, so before I jump into the next few slides, are there any questions about the data elements? So this covers the generically the information that was in the student tuition fee regent policy to set tuition and fee that you've asked to have a report on. In addition to this, part of the legislative general audit said we probably should give you some alternative scenarios that you should look at. Not just the institution proposal. I want to make it clear, we're not advocating for any of the scenarios. We're just putting it out there to give you some context, and I'll summarize them so you all have them on the screen as well. But there are three scenarios that we have put together for you. The first being just freeze tuition. What does that look like? A 0% across the board. It has implications for each institution, and the presidents are ready to answer that question as they go through, and also in the 50 pages of materials you have some of those comments already saying if you did a 0% what that would do to them. A 0% would require internal reallocation to cover compensation. The institutions didn't get 100% of the compensation. As you know, we're funded 75% from the state, so for every dollar they authorize, they give us 75 cents and say, figure out how to cover the other 25%. If you go with a 0% increase, the institutions do need to look at reallocating internal resources to make that up, or higher education employees go with less compared to state employees. The second scenario, this one is one that I wanted to kind of make sure that was in front of you with respect to, as part of the legislative process, now again, tiny numbers, it's indiligent, part of the legislative process, they actually do increase our dedicated credits to support compensation and ISF rates. ISF rates being the internal service rate funds for insurance, property insurance, audit support, as well as AG support kind of things. So in FY19, if we were to take our base budget for tuition, so this is the revenue that the institutions have reported collecting, the legislature has increased in the Appropriations Act. The institutions have not collected this yet, but they have increased it, saying in order for you to fund what we said needed to be funded, you need to generate this much additional revenue. So for example, the University of Utah, their compensation package and their rate increases equate to $4 million. Utah State, we have all of your regional campuses listed. So And it varies, but the majority of Utah State falls into their Logan line. And then you can see for the rest of the institutions. If we were just to raise tuition equivalent to what the legislature said to pay for the state compensation package and to pay for the ISF rates, you can see that the tuition increase would range from 0.6%, no, 0.42 at the Brigham City, because they've got a more tuition revenue there, to 2.55% just to cover the various match. So,
is it true to say that that doesn't allow for any growth?
It does not allow for any growth. It is a status quo. Here's what you get for your compensation. Here's what you get. It doesn't allow for promotions and tenures for faculty members that are not funded, that are part of the process. It doesn't allow for health insurance increases that may exceed the 4.35% for PEHP. Five of our institutions operate different self-funded insurance plans, which are more cost-effective for the institutions than participating in PEHP, because they're able to control the costs and monitor that a little bit better. But if they have a 12% increase in their health insurance rates, legislature is only given a 75% of a 4.35, the institution would not be able to cover that. They'd have to do it through an internal reallocation again. So this would be the bare minimum of tuition increases to meet the legislative requirements outlined in the Appropriations Act. And then alternative, yes.
When was the last time that any of the institutions didn't have a performance-related increase on compensation? Has that happened every year? The compensation increase.
It's in the last 10 years, there's probably been twice that we did not get any money from the legislature to give salary increases.
It was 2009, 10, and 11. Zeros.
And then also when they did start reinstating increases, they were 1.5, 2 kind of percent. Alternative 3 is the max, that, if you will, with respect to what you would allow an institution to potentially increase. You've set a benchmark or a threshold associated with what affordability means in terms of the sticker price and the median household income. When you look at the state median household income, it's about $62,000. You've got the board-approved threshold. You've got the FY19 published tuition and fee rates. And you can see that's, again, going to include general student fees. The current percent and what it would cost to increase to the threshold and what the maximum proposed change might be. You can see everything from a minus 7.7 to realign to the 10% at SUU to a 19% possibility at Dixie State University. So they could, by your definition of affordability, come in with a proposal. Nobody would really want to, but they might, to be able to say, this is where we need to be competitive-wise. This is what the board has allowed us in terms of a threshold. They could come forward and look at what they could potentially do there. So these are three different alternative scenarios to the proposals, and then the institutions will talk a little bit more about that. But they could go, you could freeze it, you could do nothing, you could just do the legislative match, you could do as much as your threshold that you've identified as part of your metric, you could accept the institution's proposals. If you choose none of the above, you could outline what you would like to have as long as the board comes to an agreement and moves forward. So with that, one of the other elements is what is the actual impact that we would anticipate for students based on tuition and fee increases for FY20. The fee proposals will be presented to you tomorrow, but I've included the data in here as reported to us. You can see the 2018-19 tuition and fee level. You can see the fee proposal, which, looking at that, that is half of the fee proposal. But the impact isn't going to be that dramatic. The tuition increase proposal and the relative total increase on the end. So even though the University of Utah is proposing a 3.2% increase, the net impact between the fee increase that they're proposing and the tuition increase is about 3.0%. So when you combine them, those types of things. And then finally, I wanted to, before closing up and turning time over to the institutions, there's just two slides I want to share with you. The board in its strategic plan has said that in order for us to achieve our strategic objectives and goals, we need to have a 5% annual revenue increase, regardless of whether it's tuition or tax funds. When looking at this year's base budgets, what the legislature has given us, and what the institutions are proposing with respect to their tuition increases, you can see the estimated total revenue increase and the total percent on the end. You've asked that we hit at least a 5% mark. This, the proposals as being advanced, would get you to about a 6% increase in revenue for the system to address the growth needs, to address access and completion, to address aid at the institution level, and to meet the objectives that the board has laid out for each of the institutions. So in summary, lots of information, a couple of great ideas to add for the next go around as we look at this. But you can see the first scenario I just threw in there in terms of federal aid is going to raise 1.64%. Scenario one from the commissioner's office, if you freeze it, it's a 0% increase across the board. Scenario two, if it's just the legislative match, you can see what that would be for each institution. If it was a Regent metric max level that you set it to, you could see what the percent increase would be for each institution. And then on the end, you will hear more details about each of these, but you can see what the institutions are proposing with respect to the conversations that they've had with their students and their trustees, and weighing the factors that you've just heard in terms of legislative dollars, the needs on campus that were not funded by the legislature, and other priorities. So, questions? It's in the diligent one. Did you not update that one? It will be there in just a minute. One of the last minute revisions with respect to what this was. So I apologize that it's not there. It will be there shortly. Other questions, comments, and then I will turn the time to President Heftalen.
Can I just ask one question real fast? On the debt load slide, I wonder, did you say that was all the cost, tuition, housing, everything, and Utah was the lowest? I've always assumed, and this could just be an assumption, that Utah is a very commuter-oriented higher education environment where people live at home or maybe live with parents or family. It might be helpful in future years to just look at tuition as a percentage of debt. Is there any way to do that?
We can't do, okay. It's not.
It'd be hard. I mean, it would be interesting to know that because we're so much lower than everyone else. It's hard to understand why.
Yeah, and the fact that they borrow the money, they take it, they spend it. We have no idea how they spend it, so.
So I might just, before I jump into my presentation, Regent Wright, I might just share something because I was just back in D.C. maybe 3 weeks ago, and one of the bills that's in front of Congress is looking at risk sharing for the institutions, and we have no ability on the front end of students borrowing loans to tell them that they can't do it. So we can have a student that will walk in and say, I'm going to take this particular program, I'm going to go part-time. We know what the work wages are when they graduate from the program, and what they want to take out is way too big, and we can't stop them from doing that. So we're arguing with Congress to say, if you're going to make us participate in risk sharing, give us some control on the front end so that we can reasonably advise students about good debt. So I think there is a national conversation there. So let me, before I start, introduce, we have a brand new CFO at Salt Lake Community College. Jeffrey West, who's right here with us this morning, came to us from the University of Utah and replaces Dennis Klaus, and I just wanted you all to know who he is, and he's been very involved in these conversations, as has our AVP for Budget and Finance, Darren Marshall, and Jelana Aloha, who's our Budget Director. So they're here as well. Thank you for being with us. So let me just start by giving you a little bit of a view of kind of some history. As you know, the first tier, second tier model is going away, but this is a chart that we show our students that talks about Salt Lake Community College's history in relation to first tier tuition. So over the last few years, you can see that we, over the past 5 years, we never went over the first tier tuition benchmark. We were very, very sensitive to keeping tuition as low as possible. So didn't take advantage of those second tier tuition options, although they were available to us. One of the questions that you asked is, what have we done with past years' tuition funds? So you see here that most of the time, our tuition increases are dedicated to meeting the match that the legislature tells us we have to meet in terms of compensation. So you'll see in 2018-19, we had to come up with a 25% match for our compensation and our health benefits. So with the amount of tuition that we raised, we had no excess tuition there to put towards other additional expenses that or hopes that the institution had. 2017-18, we had a little bit of a buffer in terms of when we raised tuition. By the time we paid those matches, we spent some money on admissions office staffing, and we spent some money supporting our West Valley Center, which is a new, relatively new site that we opened up on the west side. So both of those expenses, I would say, were very, very dedicated towards access in terms of helping students get in and get the process of admissions clear and helped and get them enrolled, as well as getting access in terms of physical access with our West Side campus. We've also done, I think, some significant work over the last few years. You all know that our enrollment has gone down over the past few years, and so with that enrollment drop, we have to institutionally make reallocations every year. We took a big cut a couple years ago. We did some significant reallocations within the college. We had a retirement incentive that helped us adjust those budgets accordingly. And so we're constantly every year looking at reallocations from faculty lines or staff lines to move faculty from perhaps a program that's diminishing to a program that's burgeoning, to reduce staff and move them into another area where we really need to look at some additional help. And we're doing that because we don't have that excess tuition from enrollment growth that some of my colleagues are experiencing right now. So I think I want you to know that we have every year in our budget process, before we even look at what has the state given us and what is tuition going to yield for us, we look at what can we do within our internal budgets to make some reallocations and free up some dollars that may be able to be used in a more strategic way. So we had our Truth in Tuition hearing on March 7th, and as Kimberly said, I'll just echo Kimberly's remarks. I've been leading the Truth in Tuition hearing for many, many years, and we rarely get very much interest in Truth in Tuition. Maybe, you know, it started out maybe five or six students, mostly student leaders who felt like they had to go. Then we could get some faculty members that would actually assign their class to come, so that started to grow. But this year, we had about over 180 students throughout our campuses participate. We streamed the Truth in Tuition meeting to all of our campuses, our sites, and we had student senators at all of the sites so that they could text in questions and interact with me as I was presenting these scenarios. So we were actually thrilled with the turnout and thrilled with the rally that our students' government really helped get students there. The Truth in Tuition hearing, as you see, March 7th, was held prior to the legislative end, so we were not sure what was going to happen with the budget in terms of how much the legislature was going to allocate to higher education to meet some of the needs that we had outlined in our budget request. So for the students and for our trustees, we gave scenarios, and we basically asked for a range. We said, this year we will likely go anywhere from 0 to 3% or 3.5% in our tuition increases, and here's what that would look like for you as students. Again, at that time, we didn't know what was going to happen with legislative appropriations. We kind of had a sense, and I tried to help the students understand that It's highly, highly unlikely we would ever go to 3.5% unless they just didn't do anything with us in terms of tax funds. But it would probably be somewhere between the 1.5, 2.5 range. And we started talking about that range more specifically because that seemed more realistic to us at the time. I walked them through what a 1.5% increase would look like in terms of total increase for a full-time student. We have the plateau tuition, so at 12 hours, we plateau those from 12 to 18. What that would look like for a 2.5% tuition increase and what that would look like for 3.5. And then we showed them what kind of tuition dollar, what that generates in terms of tuition dollars and how we might use that at Salt Lake Community College. So you can see the proposed uses of the dollars really significantly around the match, the compensation match, the health insurance match, and the ISF match. And those are the bulk of the dollars. We said then, depending on where we land with tuition, we would use those additional dollars, if any, to focus on campus safety and to focus on our student advising and support services. So that was the scenario that we showed to our students, and that was the scenario that we showed to our trustees. If we looked at a 0% tuition increase at Salt Lake Community College, we are mandated to use the tuition dollars to cover those matches. So we would probably just not do a compensation across. We would probably go down to maybe a 1.5, what we could cover with the 75%, and that would be the reduction that we would take if we were to do a 0% tuition. So similar to what Dr. Henry said, the way I would manage that is to do a compensation increase across the board or even with performance in there that would be lower than the 2.5% that was dedicated by the legislature for state employees. I don't like that idea, frankly. We look at salary comparisons all the time at the institution. We're always looking at our Coupa peers. We're looking at data around the region. We're looking at Utah. We're in many of our areas, we are not as competitive as we should be for faculty and for some of our high-demand staff. So keeping salaries competitive to me, keeping a health insurance plan that's strong and helps kind of entice employees to come to us, that's an important part of our plan in terms of being a workplace destination. So then the other idea would be, well, what is the minimum maybe we could do to keep that 2.5% match in place? And we would propose to you and we propose to our students and to our trustees that we would go to a 2% tuition increase this year. What that does for us is it covers the match for the compensation, which is a little over $642,000 for our employees. It covers the match of health insurance, which is $170,000, and it covers a $65,000 plus bill that we have for state risk insurance and some of those other ISF increases. That leaves us with about $230,000 to play with. We would take those two buckets of dollars, like we said to our students, and we would use them for campus safety, and we would use them for advising. Now, we benefited from the legislature. Since we made these proposals, we've seen what the legislature has done, and we were, again, very pleased with what the legislature gave to higher education. Thank you very much. We did include some advising and some mental health things on that list for the legislature, which were granted. So that gives us a little bit of breathing room. Campus safety was not on that list. I've asked our safety officers to increase their presence on all of our sites until 10 p.m. at night. That comes at an expense, and we're hiring new people to do that now. So that's where that some of that $130,000 would be. And then we are moving towards a pathways advising model at Salt Lake Community College, which is very case management heavy. That's an expensive venture, but it's a venture that, especially at an open access community college, helps students, especially first generation students, retain and complete at a better rate. We know we have to provide high touch for our students, many of whom have no idea how to navigate higher education, may become academically prepared, and that's a cost. That's a costly model, but it's an effective model. So we'll take additional dollars, even with the advising money that the legislature gave us, we will take additional dollars and hire more advisors for our Pathways program. If you have questions as I'm going through, please stop me. So I know we were going to talk about student fees tomorrow, Kimberly, but I included them in mine just so that you could see.
Can I ask a question before you move on? Just with the previous slide, just for my own information, and maybe you don't know this number, but what would the percentage increase be if you just did the the two matches and the state risk insurance increase. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
What would the tuition increase be?
Yeah, what would the percent?
I think it's about 1.5%.
Okay.
1.6%.
1.6%, yeah. would cover the two matches and the state risk.
Yeah, and it would, and then we wouldn't have that extra 230.
Right,
yep.
So it's 1.6%.
1.6.
Thank you.
Okay. I wanted to include information about student fees because I think it's important that we look at all total costs, not just tuition. So you'll see on this chart, we have a very robust student fee board. Our students are the primary voters on that board. We have administrators on that board, but they don't have the majority. So students lead that board and govern that board. We have, I don't know, maybe 15, 16 line items that our student fees pay for. We consider many of those things to be outside core functions of the college, but over time, some of those things have crept in. So our students are much more interested now than they used to be 10, 15 years ago. They're much more interested in funding and helping with childcare, about transportation, around mental health and counseling. Some of these things are really rising to our students' attention, and they're asking their other student colleagues to help support those services on campus. So this year, our students are proposing a $9 student fee increase. That's still, our fees are the second lowest in the state to Snow. I don't know what Snow's fee increases will be and tuition increases, so I don't know how we'll fare after that. Our students believed that was a reasonable increase, and so they have recommended a $9 increase. You can see that they took some money off of other student line items to make sure that that fee didn't go too much higher. And they always look at carry forwards and fund balances in student accounts so they know what they're that they could do without if they had to take money away. So if you looked at a 2% increase for tuition and you look at our increase of $9 for full-time students for student fees, you can see that currently our tuition is $1,684. The 2% would take it up $33, so our total tuition next year for a full-time student would be a little over $1,700 per semester. Our fees would be $246 per semester, and our total tuition and fees then would be just a little under $2,019.64. I am proposing a 2% tuition increase to try again to keep our tuition as low as possible, but to also cover some things that I think are very, very important for us in terms of the kinds of students that we serve daily. I do share Regent Tyer's concerns about the tuition percentages, state tax versus tuition that community colleges face in Utah. We're constantly sharing that at the legislature. You know, if for instance, if you start to differentiate tuition across the different classifications, in my opinion, I think research universities and four-year regional teaching institutions should have less tax funds than community colleges because community colleges are dedicated to keeping tuition low. In most states, that's the structure. So I think nationally, the structure is about 70-30 in terms of state tax funds to tuition across the nation in community colleges. In our state, we're not quite there yet. And I make a point to share that when I'm with the legislature to talk about how do we help lower our tuition when we are mandated by the legislature to cover a certain match with tuition dollars, we cannot adjust that. If the legislature decided to fund us at 100% for compensation and health insurance, we wouldn't raise tuition. So, questions that I can answer for you all.
Questions from anybody? Maybe a question. We saw earlier a slide comparing Salt Lake Community College's tuition and fee structure to peers, and you're lined up right with a peer group, but if you look at the Wichita and the Rocky Mountain kind of groups, you're a little high.
Yep.
How do you talk about how you're viewing that?
This is the dilemma we have. We're low in the state of Utah compared to our UC peers. So when we talk about affordability, we often talk about, you know, we're second lowest in the state in terms of tuition to my colleagues at Snow. But I do think our tuition is high, and I would love to be able to reduce our tuition. But I also think we have significant things we need to do at the institution in terms of infrastructure. We had a lot of growth when the recession hit and everybody came pouring back to our campus. We were burgeoning at 18,000 plus. Now that's subsiding. But our infrastructure, it helped when we got the equity money significantly several years ago. But I would argue we still have things internally we need to right size to be able to do the kinds of things we need with our students. Most of that is in the advising area, given our first generation population, our low income population. But if I could get 100% from the legislature in terms of the tuition and wouldn't have to match, we would be very mindful of trying to say zero tuition.
I think you've also done a great job of providing avenues for those who have real need to
I would say, and I think Kimberly's point about other available resources is an important one. We launched SLCC Promise because we know our tuition is a little high, but we also know that Utah is second to Puerto Rico on leaving Pell money on the table. We leave over $45 million of Pell money on the table annually. The only worse than us is Puerto Rico. So when I'm talking to our students, we are significantly pushing the FAFSA so that our students and their parents understand if they fill out the FAFSA, we'll help them do it, what they can leverage in terms of Pell money. And this is the first year our cohort, our loan default rate went down. We don't know the evidence yet, but we think it's tied to SLCC Promise because less students are taking out loans because they filled out Pell and they're leveraging their federal grant money. So I think we are trying to push the cost of Salt Lake Community College down by reallocating scholarships, by launching the Promise through our OER initiatives with our open education resources. I think we're trying to do what we can. I mean, I can't tell you how pleased I am with Representative Owen's bill around need-based, because that you saw that sliver, that's an embarrassing sliver on that one chart about the state and their commitment to need-based aid. I've been arguing for that for 30 years in Utah, and this is a significant year in terms of the state investing in education.
Thanks. Regent Jones, do you have a
Yes, thank
question?
You, Mr. Chair. You mentioned this briefly, but did I hear you say again that 70% is the norm for state funding versus 30%?
That's tuition? The national average, unless it's changed. Kimberly, do you know if it's changed? Yeah, so it's about 70% state funds, and some of that is local plus state. So a lot of our community college colleagues will have local levies, property tax. The local community will contribute funds. The state contributes funds, which equates typically across the nation to 70% of the cost. And then the tuition only has to cover 30% of the cost.
Is that true here, and are the trends changing? I know for a period of time, we saw some of that inching toward 50% tuition. Has that
So the the equity dollars about 3 or 4 years ago significantly helped that ratio right size. But right now you saw on Kimberly's charts, we are 62% state funded at Salt Lake Community College and 38% tuition. So I think my colleagues at SNOW, we look to see what SNOW. SNOW's 67% state funds, the balance tuition. I would love it if we could get to 70% state fund for the community colleges in the state and 30% tuition. And I think we have room to make that argument to really, I mean, the whole goal of a community college system is to create an access point, an affordable access point for students to gain confidence, to find ways to access higher education, and then to move wherever they want to move. And right now, I don't think there's as much differentiation among the tuition in our state system as there could be.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Yes, Regent Jensen.
We have about, I want to say about 65% of our faculty are adjunct. We've reduced that number over the last 2 years because our enrollment's gone down, so we haven't had to rely on adjunct as much as we've had to in the past. When the recession hit, that we were hiring a lot more adjunct than we are now, and we're not hiring them as much. So I think right now we're at about 65%, 35% full-time.
Yes, Regent Wright.
I appreciate what you said about community colleges, because there seems like in Utah there continues to be a growth of underserved populations. Mm-hmm. And it is really the gateway to higher education and upward mobility, all those things we talk about. If you could project how much more enrollment you would get if we increased, I mean, what would the growth of your community college look like if the percentage went up?
If the tuition went down, you mean?
Yeah, the percentage went to 70, as you discussed earlier.
I don't know that I can predict that. I'll say this, and I don't know that this would bear fruit with numbers, but my gut tells me this. Our SLCC promise and our activities around Pell and using FAFSA and now the Regents, or the new Promise Scholarship, I think that's opening the doors for students who are Pell eligible. I think there's still room to grow there because I think a lot of students and their parents still don't understand the Pell and how to access it. But I also think that there's this group right outside Pell. They don't qualify for Pell, but $2,000 still makes them gulp. I think that group we might be able to draw to the campus if we had a little bit better state funding and a little lower tuition. That's just my gut.
Mr. Chair, if I might just pile on there. We did not get the College Access Advisor monies this year, and I think that would significantly help the very question that Regent Wright has been mentioning. And so I'm hoping that those that are streaming in are all legislators, understanding that we need that money to help equip you to bring in the right students that can move forward and have that access.
I will share that we lobbied heavily for the advising corps because when we look at our data in the Salt Lake County region, our college going rate in Salt Lake County is going down. And it's primarily going down in the West Corridor. And we need to entice those families. We need to help those families understand in the 6th grade, in the 7th grade, and the 8th grade that there's a financial path to college, that they are smart enough to be in college. We have to change that dialogue. I would love to put resources. If the advising corps had been funded, we would have shifted our funding to middle school. And we would have put advisors in middle schools that we right now have in high schools because we could have had a little partner with the state. And we'll continue to find ways to do that because I think it's essential. But that would be a significant resource to invest in.
Okay, Regent Tyra.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think something we need to remember about our community colleges too is a lot of those students graduate with a certificate or an associate degree. And we hope that they get great jobs, great high-paying jobs. But they might not get as high-paying jobs as if they had a four-year or master's or doctorate. And so by having the tuition lower, it just gives them not so much of a problem when they do graduate to have debt or whatever they do. I think we need to remember that the purpose of a community college and why it's important to have that tuition low.
Yeah.
Regent, Vice Chair Barnes.
Yeah, I just wanted to add on the Pell piece. When we talk about that $40 million and you go to the last slide of Kimberly's under summary, and we have that 1.64, I'd be curious how that would change if we were to invest that $40 million back into this scenario. And then how would that would reflect on the percentage of tuition we're asking for?
Say this again.
So the money, the Pell money you referred to that we're leaving on the table,
oh, yes.
If we were to bring that into the equation back through advisors or whatever means, we would see that number significantly increase in the summary of Pell Grant participation in the formula and a significant decrease in the request for tuition or the need.
Yeah, we would be able to keep our tuition at a lower rate or not increase it at all.
And I'd be so curious as to how much that would impact the overall system.
I don't know the answer to
I'm not
I think
asking
we,
you.
Yeah, I think we need to play with those numbers.
And again, that's money on the table that's being lost.
But I will also, and I'd be remiss if I didn't share this, and that is that not all of our students are Pell eligible.
Right.
So we also have done significant work through our PACE scholarship program, which is, they don't have to be Pell eligible to get a PACE scholarship. Again, those are students that commit in ninth grade that they're going to do the right thing, and if they do everything they're supposed to do in ninth grade, they have a two-year scholarship at the college when they graduate. So students that may not be eligible for Pell, we're still trying to pull levers in different spaces on campus to accommodate that aid. If our tuition was lower, those dollars would go further.
I mean, back of the envelope, I think the total tuition is about $900 million for the system, so 40 out of 900, you know, it's about a 5%. It's significant. Regent Campbell.
I just wondered, President Heflin, if you could help us understand it. So if you received 100% of compensation and medical health care benefits, that would move you over a few years to that 70-30 because you wouldn't be increasing tuition. You would be increasing state assistance.
Right.
Okay, so you'd be in that ballpark, but help as Regents, help us understand what that would mean to your ability to continue to provide cutting-edge programs. I think about composite yep. materials or more technology-oriented programs. Certainly, you have to attract people who have higher demand for salaries. The programs themselves are more expensive. I mean, how long could you realistically hold a no-tuition increase if you're getting only the
right.
Cost of living for your base employees?
It would depend on two things. It would depend on, so this year, the ask that we put through the USHE budget included significant needs we had in timely completion efforts, in our access efforts, and in our workforce efforts. So we put some of those critical new positions or things that we needed, we put that in the budget. And this year, we were very, very grateful because we got most of those line items, and we can fund those. So this year, we can just cover the match. But we could have a year where they give us 100%, but they don't give us anything else.
Yeah, I don't think this year would be expected to be a normal year.
Yes, this was not a usual year.
Right.
So I don't want to create false hope here, because if that other USHE budget isn't paid attention to and we don't get some of those things that we ask for through the USHE budget, then we may very well rely on tuition to be able to not just, even though the match was covered, we might rely on tuition to give us a new diesel mechanic professor or another advisor in our Pathways program. This year those were funded through the legislature.
I do think if we're not able to address that through tuition in a normal long-term view, I'm not sure we can count on the legislature to fund each individual
yeah.
program and get to that level of granularity that we rely our presidents and trustees and regents to help address.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. Thank you, because this was an unusual year.
Okay, we're through the allotted time. I think, thank you very, very much.
Sure.
I really appreciate the information, the presentation. We're going to break for lunch. We're going to alter the schedule just a little bit because we're a little behind, but we're also going to shorten lunch just a bit and start promptly at 1:15. So we'll have 35 minutes for lunch, if that's all right. And
lunch is next door, I think.
Since we can all smell it, just follow your nose.
That's great.
We might
turn her down.